When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that wonders what acronym is an acronym for, it's SIFPOP. Welcome to SIFPOP, available in your podcast feed every Monday, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks!
Patrons get it early, because it's a perk! I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and he's pretty sure he's reading the wrong Dostoevsky books. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
I've actually read quite a few of them. Ahoy!
Each week we'll chat about movies, TV, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. What is on our minds, Andrew Ormsby? How are things?
Things are going good, man. I'm going to have a little party tomorrow. It's
nice.
Championship for paintball, of course, so gotta have my watch party. Work's going good. The dogs are dorks, but that's what I got them for, so they could be dorks. So yeah, life is good.
Nice. Yeah, it just kind of heading into fall is just kind of one of those times where it's like, okay, thank you, nice relief from the, you know, the summer heat. And
oh my gosh,
you know, it's I got up to run this week, and I was like, I may need to put a sweatshirt on. Like, it's in the 50s right now, you know?
Well, you go on your runs, like, what, 5 in the morning, something?
No,
like that?
No, not that early. It's usually, like, 7:30, somewhere in that range.
So still. Yeah. For me, that's early.
Yes. For me, after my life in morning radio, that is still sleeping in for, you know, 3 or 4 hours. So,
what did an actual morning look like? Like getting ready to go to the morning radio? Like what time would you have to wake up? Like 3 or so?
Yeah, I mean, I usually tried to get up by 4, a little before 4. And just get ready and head over. Try to be there, you know, 4:45 or so. And go from there.
Nice.
Yeah. Yep, don't miss those early mornings, that's for sure. We're going to do an episode of SIFPOP, which is probably a good thing. That's probably what you downloaded this for, I would assume. So we're going to take a look at some things, including Beetlejuice, as the big dig today, and then Rebel Ridge is the final artifact. So we'll be taking a look at those movies. We're going to talk about best ever Michael Keaton movies. Of course, do some buried treasure. But before we get to any of that, we have a Summer Sum Game winner email to read. Congratulations again to Elizabeth, who won the Summer Sum Game. And of course, the winner of any of our contests here on SIFPOP get to send in anything that you want me to say within reason. Nobody has ever sent me anything outside of reason. So, and Elizabeth is no different. Here's what Elizabeth had to say. Dear Aaron, Andrew, Alice, Jonathan, and the whole crew at SIFPOP, thank you so much for all the hard work and time you've put into the Summer Sum Challenge and the kind words about my very lucky picks. I may not be a grandma yet, but I'm definitely the average moviegoer and no expert at all. It was really thrilling to keep up with all summer, so thank you for all the fun. I own a dance studio, and nothing means more to me than my wonderful students and staff. So if you don't mind, would you please say this? And I will say this, Elizabeth, and I will do my best to give it the old voiceover, try here. So here we go. Twinkle Toes Performing Arts Company in Virginia Beach is here to make all your children's dance dreams come true. Who knows? Maybe musical theater training with us will take your child all the way to Hollywood in the next big movie musical to be reviewed here on SIF Pop. Twinkle Toes Performing Arts Company, Virginia Beach. There you go. So, and also thanks for listening out in Virginia Beach. Hope life on Virginia Beach is going well. And tell all the kiddos to keep dancing, keep having fun, and hopefully we do see them down the line. Elizabeth finishes by saying, "What I want to say more than anything is thank you. Thank you for the laughs. Thank you for the reviews. Thank you for being the film friends we've probably never met. I look forward to your podcast each week and appreciate every minute of your hard work. Best, Elizabeth." Well, we appreciate you too, Elizabeth. So thank you for that. We really do appreciate everybody who checks out what's going on here. And, it's always nice to know that it's hitting some ears. There's some ears out there that are hearing what we're saying. Well, let's get into the podcast. Beyond that, we're going to kick it off with some buried treasure. Andrew, what's that one thing in any area of pop culture that you want to make sure people know about this week?
Well, I'm going to go with another Vigima game for us this week. Going to go with a video game from the developer Game Science. Huge game on the market right now called Black Myth Wukong. I teased this a couple weeks ago,
right,
saying that I'd been playing it for a while. Mm-hmm. Now I'm actually going to do a full review of it since I'm near the end of the game. Haven't beat it yet, but I'm near the end of it, so I've played enough of it. I feel like I've got a sense of what the game has to offer and everything like that. So Black Myth Wukong is a game about... Sun Wukong, who is a god in Chinese mythology, and this game follows a chosen one who is destined to be the next great Wukong. This is a very, very rushed summary of the game because there's a mm-hmm. lot of lore behind it. But the gameplay is amazing. It reminds me a lot of God of War. So if you've ever played the God of War games, it's kind of like that, but it's challenging in a way that you would only find in like a Dark Souls game.
Mm.
So if you're into those games that really push your abilities and really make you appreciate those wins because they come so few and far between, then this might be one to check out. And if you love a game like God of War, which has a lot of great mythology and, you know, lore behind it, then this might also be a game for you. So I think all around, this is just a really well done game.
Nice. What format do you play on?
You can play this on either PC or PlayStation. I am playing it on PC right now. And for those of you who are curious, I am at Yellow Brow, the boss right now.
Nice. I thought that was your gamer. I thought you were giving your gamer tag.
Yellow Brow
on PlayStation Plus or whatever.
No, it's just a single player game. There's no online or anything like that.
My buried treasure is the new season has just started for Slow Horses on FX and Hulu. Slow Horses, I think this is season 3. No, I bet this is 4. Because I started last year to catch up on this show and was very glad that I did. And so I may have even had this as a buried treasure before, but it's worth saying again. This is based on a series of novels. And so each season, I think, vaguely follows one of the novels in, I believe they're called Slough House Mysteries. There's nothing else on TV like this right now, I don't think. It's a combination of kind of that mystery spy genre and then just really interesting characters. And really great performances. Gary Oldman at the center of it all. Like Gary Oldman, I mean, when do you remember Gary Oldman giving a non-interesting performance? Even if you didn't like his performance, you know what I mean? Like, the guy makes choices, right?
Yeah.
And he is making choices here as well. I love this character. And I think it's a really fine piece of writing, and it's just really good all around. Kristen Scott Thomas is in this as well. Jonathan Pryce in here. Hugo Weaving comes in this season as well. So just lots of great talent and lots of great stories, lots of great characters. Yeah, I highly recommend Slow Horses if I haven't mentioned it before. And even if I have, you should check it out on Hulu or FX. So there you go. Have you watched Slow Horses at all, Andrew?
I have not even heard of this show.
I think this would be right up your alley.
I haven't heard of a Gary Oldman show.
Yeah, I think you would really enjoy this. So yeah, I guess that means this is my first time having it as my buried treasure, or you don't pay attention to what I say.
It's a 50-50, I'm not going to lie. I can't tell you which one it is. Well,
considering I don't even know, I don't even pay attention to what I say myself. So there's no judgment here. No judgment here at all. All right, let's get into our reviews. Let's start with the big dig. Let's talk about Beetlejuice. Beetlejuice.
When I was a teenager, a trickster demon terrorized our entire family and tried to force me to marry him. I believed he was gone forever until you found this in the attic.
Ew. Who's Beetlejuice?
Don't ever say that name.
Beetlejuice.
No, Astrid! I am serious! If you say his name 3 times, he will appear.
Beetlejuice.
The juice is loose.
After family tragedy, 3 generations of the Dietz family return home to Winter River. Still haunted by Beetlejuice, Lydia's life is turned upside down when her teenage daughter, Astrid, accidentally opens the portal to the afterlife. Beetlejuice brings back Michael Keaton as the titular character, and then many of the others you know as well. Winona Ryder coming back to play that, and adding Jenna Ortega into the mix here as well as some others. But what did you think, Andrew? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
May not be a surprise, but I did not like it.
Okay.
High-sided, did not like it. Close to okay, but did not like it.
Close to okay. I'm straight in the liked it. I really liked this. I had a really good time with this. My general thoughts are that it is so complex to me, not just to bring a movie back that is almost 40 years old. The Beetlejuice movie is almost 40 years old, to bring it back after 40 years, but also to do so in a way when it's a movie like this that honors the quirkiness, the tonality, all that of the movie that came out 40 years ago, because, you know, how do movies change? How do tones change? And I think what makes it special is probably Tim Burton, because Tim Burton hasn't really, quote unquote, changed all that much. Now, he's done different kinds of movies. He's done, you know,
Big Fish
and Big Eyes, and maybe there was a third big movie to, you know, finish out the trilogy. Big Feet, is that
big
one of
feet,
them?
Big Feet, yeah.
He's done more serious films, which have their own, you know, tonality that still feels like him. But really what we think of when we think of Tim Burton is this, right? It's macabre stuff, being silly, being quirky, and going there. And I felt like this movie really continued that and really paid homage to it in a nice way. I felt like Michael Keaton hadn't missed a beat.
That's exactly what I was going to bring up.
There's a benefit that he has to being hidden under all that makeup, because you're not dealing with the immediate cognitive dissonance of aging 40 years. Although in Hollywood, aging is different than it is for most of us, but you're not dealing with that, because they make him up to look exactly like he looked 40 years ago, right? And so the only thing that would give it away is the energy or those, and it's all there, man. And that's not easy to do. It's one of the things when I talked about what was the Scorsese movie with De Niro,
Irishman.
Yeah, and The Irishman, when they de-aged, you know, De Niro, it still looked like an older De Niro, even though the face looked younger because of the way he moved.
Yeah,
right? Exactly. You know, there was a movement to it. And this just looks like young Keaton running around, doing his thing. And I was just really impressed with his performance and still being able to pull that off. And I laughed a lot. I had a lot of fun, a lot of, you know, great visual puns, a lot of really funny visualizations of, you know, this franchise has given us the idea that how you die, just that's how you remain in the afterlife. And yeah. So, you know, when you're walking around the afterlife, you can tell how people died because they're, you know, missing an arm or, you know, frozen solid or whatever the case may be. And I, you know, a lot of that was really, really funny. There is a villain in this whose intro is so interesting to the effects on, I'll just say, putting the puzzle back together is so interesting to me. And I just watched that going, that is the Tim Burton-iest thing I've ever seen. It's yes. gross and it's macabre, but it's so cool and so yeah. weird. And there were a few moments like that where I was just like, okay, all right, Tim's back in the like it's back at the Burton groove. And I feel like this movie goes there. So yeah, I had a really great time. What are some of your overall thoughts, Andrew?
Well, I totally agree with you that Michael Keaton has not missed a beat. He just absolutely recaptures Beetlejuice in this perfectly. Like you said, whenever you get older, sometimes you lose some of that physical comedy timing and everything. Mm-hmm. Not here. He's kind of like Dick Van Dyke, you know, the guy just can't lose that ability to, or that comedic timing. He'll always have it, apparently. For other performances in this movie, I thought everybody was pretty good. I like Winona Ryder in this, Catherine O'Hara coming back. Jenna Ortega, she wasn't Wednesday, and that was cool. And that's what I was afraid of, that, you know, she's going to be Wednesday and everything from now on. But no, she wasn't. She really was somebody else. I do have a lot of negatives with this movie, but I want to say this up front so everybody knows what kind of headspace I'm in. And that is, I just don't really vibe with Tim Burton.
Right.
So I've said this before. There are certain movies of his that I do like Batman or Big Fish and maybe one or two others. But for the most part, I could watch was James and the Giant Peach one of his? Or no, I'm thinking of Nightmare on Elm Street. Nightmare Before Christmas.
Nightmare Before Christmas was definitely him.
Yeah. The point I'm trying to bring up is like those type of movies, like his style, just like you said, the macabre, I just never really jived with. There are,
for clarification, Henry Selick directed the James and the Giant Peach stop motion.
Thank you for looking that up, because it felt like a Tim Burton, but I wasn't for sure.
Sure.
The story is where this movie loses me, though, because it's so patchy and it's so fleeting in that it doesn't really matter, because I think what the movie was really interested was getting people back in the seats to watch Michael Keaton do his thing. Mm-hmm. And the story can be damned, because that's not why we're here. Mm-hmm. But from a critical standpoint, I gotta call it on it that I don't think that the story in this is all that great. There are, you mentioned one, but there's a surprise villain, I guess you could say, that I saw coming like a mile and a half away. Sure. Not saying that because it's predictable, it's bad, which has been a problem with me in the past, but not here. But how each of these villains are wrapped up makes them feel so nothing.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. It is my biggest complaint with this movie, is that it doesn't really have a sense of typical character purpose, right? So typically you have a protagonist and antagonist. The protagonist overcomes the antagonist in a big way. That's what's exciting. That's the climax.
Yeah.
You know, those kind of things. levels of that here, but it is not orchestrated in a way that is particularly interesting or engaging or complete. It feels like it's missing something. Like there's a real lack of depth to what's going on with that part of the story. I completely agree.
Nice. Big pro for me. I think this movie has some great needle drops. I think that some of the songs that are dropped, like the Richard Marx one, had me rolling. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. It was just like, oh, that's a perfect song right there.
Uh-huh. Yeah. yeah, I was laughing.
Yeah. It's a funny movie. I will give it props for that. And a lot of it's Michael Keaton. But Catherine O'Hara is funny in this as well.
Mm-hmm.
She has some really good. Also, I don't like him in the movie, but he did have some good one-liners. Justin Theroux. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to feel about his character because I think he's doing exactly what Tim Burton wanted him to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what I would have wanted him to do. So,
yeah, you know, I think I like it more than you do. I like that performance, but I think I see what you're talking about. Sometimes there is an actor-director mix that just, it doesn't exactly vibe, right? Like there's, you know, it's, there are some actors that are just better able to do Wes Anderson, Bill Murray, or whoever. There are some actors that are just better able to do the Coen brothers, you know, like there's a vibe that happens sometimes with acting and directing, writing, is a big part of it as well, that just works. Mm. And you're right. I don't know that Justin is completely in sync with the Tim Burton aesthetic, but I thought he pulled it off pretty well. I didn't think it was terrible.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have any negatives about this besides the story arc?
It was really the only one I wanted to talk about. I don't know. I guess the answer is no. That was pretty much the only negative. The other thing that stood out to me is I find it interesting that I enjoy these movies because I'm not usually a fan of blood and guts or, you know, whatever. And I think it's the Pee-wee's Playhouse of it all. I think it's just that there's something about the silliness that allows me to laugh at somebody who's been bitten in half by a shark and is squirting blood. You know what I mean? Like in any other movie that is playing in realism or whatever, I am out. I don't need that. That doesn't do anything for me. But here the silliness does. It entertains me. It makes me laugh. It's, you know, it's funny to me, and I think that's a real magic trick that Tim Burton has, is the ability to make the macabre so funny, and so silly. So, yeah.
I'm surprised that they made Charles, who is Jeffrey Jones, the Charles character, such a vital and important aspect of this movie. I would have tried to distance myself from Jeffrey Jones as much as possible.
I honestly think they did distance themselves as much as possible.
Like, really? They kept bringing him up.
Well, yeah, but how do you? I don't know how you do this movie without bringing him up. And I think they did it in the best way that they knew how.
Is it spoilers to say that somebody is not in this movie?
No, I don't think so.
I just like Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis aren't in this movie.
Correct.
They were explained away a lot quicker than Charles was. And I would have,
well, but they were dead.
Yeah.
Right.
I would have, nah, never mind.
I don't know. Believe me, everybody understands what you're saying. If you don't know what happened with this actor, we don't need to rehash it here.
No, well,
you can go look it up and understand what we're saying, but I thought it was about as little as they could get away with, you know, to handle it in that way. So yeah, I just think it's weird if it never comes up. I don't know, maybe that's just me. Anything else? You got one last thing on this?
I can't remember. I don't think there's a post-credit scene. I stayed, but then a staff member at Alamo said there's nothing after the credits. So I was like, oh, okay.
So secondhand confirmation.
Secondhand confirmation.
There's no post-credit scene. I don't remember there being one, and I think I stayed through the whole thing. And that is my one last thing, and the reason I stayed through the whole credits. The chance to hear Elfman on this level and in those kind of speakers.
Oh, I should have brought that up. Yeah.
I was in heaven listening to that score on fancy movie speakers in fancy, you know, Dolby Atmos stereo. It was glorious. He's so talented. His score for this is so fun and interesting. And I really, really enjoyed that aspect of the movie as well.
Yeah.
That is Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. It is in theaters. I say go see it. And again, in theaters for that, you know, high quality music mix, if nothing else. And, you know, also to keep movies alive. It's your responsibility as a consumer to make sure industries don't die. That's why you have to send more mail. That's why it's your responsibility to keep industry alive. Capitalism on SifPop. All right. Let's get into the best ever challenge. Let's talk about Michael Keaton movies. Best ever Michael Keaton movie. Since there's just the two of us, let's each nominate five. Let's go ahead and do that.
Okay.
Unless we run out, and that's fine as well. But why don't you kick us off? What's your first nomination for best ever Michael Keaton movie?
What I consider to be the best Michael Keaton movie is Birdman. Absolutely love this one. Inuyuritu is... Oh, wait. This is Inuyuritu, isn't it?
Birdman
is it Corone?
Yeah. No, Birdman's Inuyuritu, I thought.
Okay.
Or maybe you just put that in my brain. No, it's Inuyuritu.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, all one shot, quote unquote. Brilliant way to tell a story, and I think that Michael Keaton is on fire when it comes to giving a truly amazing and Oscar-worthy performance.
I think it's safe to say that won't be our combined choice for best Michael Keaton movie ever, just because I am historically on record with an opinion that hasn't really changed since I've seen it again, which is that it's pretty overrated. I'm not a huge fan of this movie. I enjoy some of the technical aspects, but I don't think the movie is very clear in its purpose or message or in its execution. So
I do remember whenever I went to go see this movie, I left the theater and I was thinking at the time, man, there is no way any movie beats that for best picture. And then I was like, my friend's like, hey, you want to go see another movie? And I'm like, yeah, what is it? They're like, it's called Whiplash. And now you know that's my third favorite movie of all time.
Uh-huh.
So, to have that 1-2 punch of what I consider to be amazing movies felt like I was back in 2007 whenever movies were on fire.
All right. I'm going to nominate, speaking of Best Picture, I'm going to nominate Spotlight.
That was my next one.
Yeah, I think that has to be on here. What's your second nomination?
How about Toy Story 3?
That's a great nomination. You know, sometimes those animated films aren't necessarily the first ones you think of, but Toy Story 3 is certainly a great movie.
Yep.
I'm going to nominate Out of Sight next, the Soderbergh movie.
Have I seen it? It sounds so familiar.
Out of Sight is Clooney and Lopez.
Oh, yeah. Wait, Keaton's in this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, I think there's even some fun crossover with that character in the character in Jackie Brown. I think it's the same character from Jackie Brown.
I remember this now. He has a... he's uncredited in this, I think.
Is he?
Yeah, and Out of Sight. Now that you say that, it's all coming back to me. Yeah, it is the same character from Jackie Brown.
Yeah.
Which, now that we've mentioned it, that's my next.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. That's funny.
All right. So Out of Sight in Jackie Brown, he gets nominated for the same character in two different movies. I'm going to go with Much Ado About Nothing next. Shakespeare adaptation that I really, really love, with a lot of interesting actors in it doing Shakespeare. If you haven't checked it out, you should check it out. It's good stuff.
Okay. My next one will be, if I didn't nominate this, I would lose my geekdom card. I got to go with Batman.
Fair, fair. Good choice. Certainly would be in this conversation with a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Then I will go for my next choice. Might be a surprising one. Multiplicity.
I love this movie. I really like this movie.
I love this movie. I think there is something. This is the Keaton that I love the most, and it's just the straight comedy Keaton, but in a more like authentically human persona than like Batman or Beetlejuice or, you know, whatever. And, you know, he honestly didn't do a lot of this type of movie after this. Right. It became the bigger stuff. He kind of went through a career decline for a few years there, and then kind of came back with some, you know, more Oscar type stuff.
Yeah.
But his career, when you look at it, doesn't have enough of this kind of movie for me. You know, you even look at things like, I'm trying to think of something that people would say would be a, you know, comedy, in his later career, and there's just
the other guys.
One. Yeah, but that's not really.
It's not a Keaton comedy.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not him doing this. It's not him doing Mr. Mom or Multiplicity. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and that's great Keaton there, and it's not one that showed up a lot. It's subtly in there in all of his performances, which is great. And by the way, said the same thing about Jim Carrey until Sonic. Right? Like, you know, Jim Carrey stopped doing,
oh yeah,
like classic rubber face Jim Carrey stuff for a long time, and then came back and did, you know, Sonic. But, you know, Keaton hasn't come back and done, you know, another Mr. Mom or Night Shift or, you know, whatever it might be that he did early in his career. So anyhow, I love this movie, and I think this is my favorite version of Keaton the Comedian.
Nice.
What's your next nom?
Is this my fourth coming up?
I think this is your fifth.
Fifth and final
one. I think
one.
You nominated Birdman, Toy Story 3, Jackie Brown, Batman, and then this will be number five.
Okay, you're right. I got to go with Spider-Man Homecoming.
Mm-hmm. And if we were talking best Keaton performances, I think it would even have, like, be up there for. I think he's amazing in this movie. I think he's so good.
That scene with him, Peter Parker, and when they're in the car on the way to prom, that's how you do tension right there. That's just great tension building right there.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Yeah, I think that should be in there as well. I gotta throw in Trial of the Chicago 7. That's gonna be my final nomination.
Oh, man. I'm so bad at this game this week. That would have been on mine.
Well, it is. We're doing this together now.
That's Andy. True.
There's no competition here. No judgment. Trial of the Chicago 7. Seen it several times. Loved watching it every time. It's just good Sorkin, in my opinion.
It's great Sorkin. It's my number one movie of, when did this come out? 2020?
2020? Soon to be half a decade ago. It's not okay.
No.
It's not okay how fast time moves. All right, here are the nominations for best ever Michael Keaton movie. You ready for this?
Okay.
Birdman, Spotlight, Toy Story 3, Out of Sight, Jackie Brown, Much Ado About Nothing, Batman, Multiplicity, Spider-Man Homecoming, and The Trial of the Chicago 7. I mentioned I'm probably vetoing Birdman. Any you want to veto on this list that you're just like, nah, not going to be that one?
No, not particularly. Okay. I mean, like, I don't think movies like Multiplicity have a chance of competing.
Right.
So I'm not going to throw away a veto on it. But with the list I'm looking at in front of me, I think it comes down to two. I think it comes down to Trial of Chicago 7 and Spotlight.
Okay.
Are there any, like, I know a lot of people are surprised I'm not saying Batman.
Out of Sight is a great movie, man. And Toy Story 3 is a great movie as well. I think you're right, though. And I think what gives Spotlight the edge is, even though that is an ensemble, it kind of is Keaton's movie. Do you know what I mean? Like, it feels like, even though that's an ensemble piece, he does kind of, well, pardon the pun, take the spotlight in that movie.
Yeah.
So I think Spotlight's probably the choice if you're down with that.
Yeah, I think Trial of Chicago 7 is a better movie
than Spotlight.
Than Spotlight, yeah.
Yeah, you really love that movie.
I really do. But I am willing to concede that Spotlight, because this is a Michael Keaton list, and it really is his movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
All right, the best ever Michael Keaton movie is Spotlight. And there you go with the best ever challenge.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Then buy one, get one free on our full line sale of tender Tyson chicken with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right. Let's get to our final artifact, Andrew. Let's talk about Rebel Ridge.
Hey, Mike, I'm posting bail. You stay low, all right?
You can fight for the money, but that'll take you most of a year and cost you twice what you're owed.
And it's legal?
It's law.
May I at least see my cousin?
You can crowd off.
I would love to, sir, just as soon as I get my money back.
You do not stand in my station in front of my officers. Set terms. You need to be very, very careful.
Let's not do that.
Chief!
A former Marine confronts corruption in a small town when local law enforcement unjustly seizes the bag of cash he needs to post his cousin's bail. Rebel Ridge is on Netflix. Been on there for a couple weeks, I think. Stars Aaron Pierre as Terry Richmond. Anna Sophia Robb in there, and then Don Johnson is Chief Sandy Burns, James Cromwell popping in there too. So what did you think? What did you think of Rebel Ridge? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
Just okay.
Just okay on Rebel Ridge. Just a downer week for you, Mr. Orms. We didn't like anything that we
I'm pouty about it too.
And he's mad about it. I am shocked that you didn't love this movie. I loved this movie. And I thought you were going to be shocked how much I loved this movie.
I am kind of shocked how much you love this movie.
I haven't even told you how much I loved this movie. I loved this movie this much. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know how to interpret that. No, I really did have a fabulous time with this. I think the reason is this. I think it's twofold. Number one, this is some of the crispest, crackliest dialogue I've heard in one of these kinds of movies in a long time. There are tête-à-tête after tête-à-tête in this movie where both human beings are on point, saying things that make sense, are interesting, dynamic, build the tension. This Terry Richmond character is a different version of the kind of invincible character we've seen in movies like this before, you know, just like has it all together, understands everything, you know, and just is the, you know, the dude, right? Like he's just the guy, not the dude from, you know,
not the Big Lebowski,
but he's just the guy.
Yeah.
The man. And
he's the man.
He is. And that combined with Don Johnson's character, I just think there's such a crackling energy of their confrontation that it really drove the movie for me. And the first 30 minutes of this movie was just pure energy for me. I was so engaged, so into this thing. I also think the other reason is he is doing more realistic, authentic things to avoid hurting people than I think I've ever seen one of these characters do. Like he is trying to keep things at their lowest possible consequence level.
He's trying to disarm, not disable.
Correct. Through the entire movie. Now, does he have to disable? Yes, he has to eventually do things. But there's an acronym speech that he gives in one of the first tete-a-tetes.
Is that John Wick speech?
And it is so perfectly, for me, the reason why I like that character. Because he has a process, and his process is to accomplish a needed goal with as few casualties as possible, in whatever, you know, way that term means. And I just, those two things together, I was really on board with what's going to happen, how is this going to take place. The movie has an interesting structure as well, where there's really, you know, within the first half hour is a whole movie. There's kind of a whole movie in the first half hour, and then there's a secondary movie after that for the next hour. I found that really, really interesting as well. I'll just add one more thing in my general thoughts, and then Andrew, I want to hear why it was just okay. Which is that this movie deals with propaganda, racial relations between police and the black community, these kinds of issues in a way that, for me, a white guy, so take that, you know, for what it's worth, because, you know, I've never been pulled over for my skin color. Like, I don't know what that's like, right?
Yeah.
But it handles those issues in a way to me that felt really authentic and honoring to the experience of everyone involved. In other words, especially once you get to the end of this movie, I love the ending of this movie. Oh my goodness, do I love the way this movie ends. I feel like it has something to say about human nature and about where we are as people and about where we need to be and how do we need to get there. And from my perspective, I can only speak from my perspective, I felt like there was an honesty and an honorability to the way it handled you know, a lot of the very tricky conversations we're going through as a culture as it deals with policing, and didn't just paint with a broad brush either way, so to speak. I really dug what this movie was doing. Came away loving it. So yeah, nice. Tell me about your experience, Andrew.
I agree with everything you've said.
Oh, nice.
I really do. But here's maybe where you'll get an understanding of why I came down on just the okay section of this. Because you said earlier that the first 30 minutes of this movie could be a movie in and of itself. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it is.
that's what I was expecting the whole movie to be.
Mm.
And when it wasn't, I was thrown for a loop because the movie, not to get into spoilers or anything, I don't know, I take that back, this isn't spoilers. It devolves into a less intense, action-packed First Blood. You know, an ex-soldier having to take on a corrupt police force, you know.
There is a lot of First Blood here, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, which I wasn't expecting. And it's like you said, I watched the first half of this movie, or the first 30 minutes of this movie, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be a great movie. Like you said, and this was going to be something that I brought up, as a white guy, I'm never going to fully understand what it's like to mm-hmm. be pulled over for the color of my skin. But I thought that this movie was going to give me an inside glimpse into what that kind of is like, you know. Mm-hmm. But then the movie divulges into the less probable, I guess you could say, and it becomes mm-hmm. more extreme in its corruption and its action mm-hmm. and its sure. stuff like that. That it kind of watered down that experience I had in the first 30 minutes. I'm like, wow, this is going to be a really, really remarkable movie. And I'm finally going to, you know, get, you know, it's going to be Netflix, a Best Picture nomination right here. But
right. No. I think I see what you're seeing. I don't think this movie ever set out to be Blindspotting, right? You know what I mean? Like, I don't think it's like trying.
That's a perfect example.
I don't think it's trying to be that movie. I think it's trying to be a great action thriller that plays enough in that space to have something to say, right? Which is a little bit different for me. I think the opening scene, not the opening 30 minutes, the opening scene says everything the movie wants to say on one side of this particular conversation. Like, that scene has a lot to say about the current state of policing and those kind of things. The movie mm-hmm. then is, it's about character motivations. It's about, you know, getting from A to B. How do you get there? How do you accomplish these things? Our interest isn't just in how they're doing this black man dirty. Our interest is beyond that in how is this character that's been wronged going to find a way to do the impossible and, you know, come out the other side alive, you know? So there's a shift that does happen, but I didn't think from the movie's perspective, that's not a shift. That's a continuation of what it's trying to do. And the blind spottingness of it all, for that's a terrible way to say it, but I think you know what I mean when I say that.
No, I think the audience, if they've seen the movie, they'll understand exactly what you mean by that. So
is really just something that it is. It's the playground it's playing on, not necessarily the game that it's trying to play. Mm-hmm. If that makes any sense metaphorically, but. But I do see what you're saying. And I did have a similar experience about 45 minutes in, probably. So 15 minutes after there's semi-resolution, let's say, like the, you know, the that first 30 minute movie ends or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking, oh, this is going to be one of those movies that I just couldn't live up to its opening. Okay, I see what's going on here. And then I started to really vibe and fall into what it was doing with these characters and realized there hasn't been a shift or a change in who these characters are and what their goals are and anything like that. There's been a shift in pace, and that's sometimes hard to reckon with. And I was having a difficult time reckoning with it, but I think within the next, you know, I think by the time we hit an hour, I think we're back into full force action stuff. Like there's, I think it's a donut. I think it's a donut movie. I think there's, you know,
is there a donut hole inside the donut hole?
No, there isn't. But I do think the donut hole in this movie can feel like a donut hole. Like it can feel like it's a bit empty and slow. And like it does, it definitely slows down. It is not an edge of your seat front to back movie. It is an edge of your seat front and back movie, maybe. Mm. So, and maybe the end didn't work as well for you as it did for me. I thought the way the movie ends. I mean, the last series of action scenes, maybe those didn't play out as
it really didn't work for me, because I had too many times where I was questioning characters' decisions. I was like, why would you do that?
Yeah.
There was a couple of characters. I'm like, huh, why would you do that? Okay. Oh, why would you do that? Now, I had like two or three where I questioned characters' actions.
Can you tell me the characters without giving away the actions?
If you give me 2 seconds here. Sure. Officer Evan Marston.
Mm-hmm.
Then
the David Denman character?
Yes.
Yeah.
Which David Denman is a great actor, and I really, really like that guy.
I think that's seated. I think that is seated in the first scene. And I think we are meant to feel that character's discomfort, through a lot of that early movie. So that didn't completely catch me off guard.
Okay.
Officer Jessica, maybe the other one.
Yes. That's who I thought.
I loved the way that character was handled. I thought that character, all those decisions seem really well laid out to me from the movie, in conversations. There were two or three conversations with that character that I think played a really big role in what happens later in the movie.
Mm. I want to give some shout outs to performances real quick, if that's sure. All right. Aaron Pierre, our lead here, Terry Richmond, very stoic.
Yeah, very, that's perfect. Yeah.
I think for, you know, a former soldier, the way that the characters presented to us, you know, living off the grid, very minimalistic. Very well put together character. I found him very interesting. Mm-hmm. Don Johnson, I think, is great. He has this ability to play slimy so well.
Yeah.
He really does. But honestly, I want to give a shout out to Emery Cohen, who I think gives the best performance in the movie.
Hmm. Yeah, you might be right. That's a really good performance. I didn't even think of it.
So evil, but
yeah,
so but believable.
But exactly. It's not mustache twirly. It's the right kind of under the surface bubbling evil that feels real. It feels like, you know, that police officer exists in this world many times over. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when you get too mustache twirly about it, it's like, yeah, I don't really think that guy exists. You know what I mean? But this guy, it feels like exists.
Exactly.
And way too many of him exists. I agree. I think that's a really tricky thing to do, and I think he pulled it off.
Maybe I'm just putting too much of my own expectations on what movies are supposed to be, and instead of just letting the story guide me through and tell the story that it wants to tell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, in general, again, if you go to classic, you know, storytelling structure, and you're looking at protagonists, and, you know, you're looking at Aaron Pierre, and I think the movie is very clear from that first scene that he is the protagonist. He's the one that we are supposed to want to root for, want to survive, want to accomplish his goals, want, you know, what he wants. And I don't think the movie ever strays from that. So I, you know, it's if you follow him, like if you're invested in him, I think you remain invested in the entire movie, even once it kind of shifts its tone there for a bit in the middle, because you want to know, is he going to walk away? Is he going to de-escalate? What is valuable and important enough for him to re-escalate a situation, you know, knowing how much he doesn't want to hurt people in the worst of worst situations, he is using non-lethal force purposefully as a way to de-escalate. I love this. Yes, that's right. Less than lethal. Correct. That is absolutely correct. Yeah, so I think the Terry character, if you're involved enough in the Terry character, I think it could, you know, carry you through, as opposed to if you're invested in the messages that are and ideas that are coming across in that first scene, and then those disappear, you know, kind of disappear or at least go under the surface for a while, then maybe, you know, the interest wanes because that was the thing that you, you know, you were attached to. But yeah, I'd recommend it. I think it's well worth watching. We didn't even really talk much about James Cromwell. And he's not in a ton of the movie. And honestly, it felt like maybe that character was, I understood the least, that character's, not role in the plot. I get the technical role in the plot, but the emotional stakes and role of our protagonist, I don't know, that they tied too much to that character. So I didn't really feel a lot, about that.
It felt like a weird decision to cast James Cromwell in that role because mm-hmm. he's James Cromwell.
Right.
Like, yeah. It felt like wasted.
Yeah. It was weird when he said, "That'll do, Terry. That'll do."
Yeah, that'll do, Terry.
That was strange. I didn't like that choice.
What would you think about this becoming a series, like kind of like Jack Reacher is? Or do you think we already have Jack Reacher?
Yeah, my initial reaction is always, why can't it just be this one thing and we can have it and we can love it or whatever? But that is not the world we live in. And I love this character. I think once you make this character a bit of a superhero, it changes things, though. You know, I think there's something, and this is the John Wick thing as well, by the way. I dealt with this in the future John Wick movies. He never felt as authentic to me in the sequels as he did in the original as a human being. He felt like a superhero the more that those movies went on. And it's not that he's not doing superhero-like stuff in the first movie. It's just that we know him as a human being who experiences love and loss and those things, and not just a cog in, you know, an international whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it just it changes things. And so whatever overlying mythos or structure you want to give to the Terry Richmond character, as part of, you know, what was it? Mapos or something, martial arts.
McMap,
you know, that changes things a little bit for me. And in the second you're like, oh, Terry Richmond just happened to get in two situations like this in his life, then I'm going, that doesn't feel as real and authentic to me either. So that's what it is. I think that's why I sometimes lean towards just letting this exist, because Terry Richmond as a character exists as a real human being to me right now. And if you Jack Ryan him and put him in more situations like this, and I'm not saying Jack Ryan is actually an opposite kind of character to this, but I'm just saying Jack Ryan becomes less human to me because somehow he's always involved in the biggest thing going on in the government. And it's just like, I don't know, it becomes fiction at that point that I can't ignore. And the fiction here, I can ignore a little bit. So I don't know if any of that made sense, but I think I kind of talked through my feelings on that a little bit. I'd watch it in a heartbeat. And maybe they can figure out how to do it, but yeah, it would steal a little of the magic of the character
for me. I agree. I really do. And that's coming from somebody who thought the movie was just okay.
That's right.
But the more you talk about it, the more I realize that I agree with you. And I'm like, well, maybe I did kind of like this movie. It was just that bad taste in my mouth of getting two movies in one. And I think that them being so tonally different really, really affected me.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like a overall, once you're done with it, you don't feel like its intent is to be a message movie. Its intent is to be an action movie that has a message. And I kind of like that better sometimes because it's less didactic. It feels, you know, and I don't think all message movies are didactic or preachy. I think you can do that really, really well. I think Blindspotting is a great example of doing that really, really well. Mm. But when you do this, you allow it to be just kind of the foundation of what's going on and not the point. And yeah, that's going to have very varying levels of effectiveness for what people want in their entertainment. And so I think there's a place for it, though.
Nice. So this is pretty high up on your movie of the year's list then, isn't it?
I think it'll be in my, yeah, it'll be in my discussion. I was trying to remember. It's so funny how quickly I forget like what I rate things, because the rating is not like the the real big thing for me. But I think I gave it 4 stars, which should put in the, I gave it four out of five. So that, you know, when I go take a look here coming up at the end of the year, I'll do an initial sort by my star rating, and then I will ponder which movies I liked more than other movies, but it'll have a head start on some other good movies that I did 3.5 or whatever. So, yep. Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice is 3.5.
Hey, you said the name 4 times. Calm down.
How many times did I say it?
4.
Oh, then that's fine. As long as you don't say it 3.
Yeah.
Can you get to 4?
The number you count shall be 3, not 2, not 4. 5 is right out.
It'd be hilarious if somebody was, if he popped up after the third one and somebody said a fourth one. I was like, I didn't say it 3 times. I said it 4 times, and that worked. You know, that logic worked. There you go. That is Rebel Ridge. You can check it out on Netflix if you like to. Well, we did a podcast, Andrew. Ooh. Congratulations to both of us. Podcasting has been done.
Nice.
Yes, it is a
Proud
good day.
Of us.
It's a good day. Thanks so much for joining us for SifPop today. It is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out today.
Thank you, buddy.
Big thanks to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Thanks, Phil.
Much love and gratitude to our SifPop members for giving monthly to make SifPop a real thing. Support starts at $3 a month, and you get access to every bonus episode, as well as some other fun perks, including lots of stuff you can check out there. Find out more at patreon.com/SifPop. Lots of ways to connect with the podcast. You can leave a comment or rating or a review at Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or email us at feedback@SifPop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like the show, too. So let them know about it, and that listening is much easier than doing enough cardio to out-bike a bus up a hill. We will be back. We'll be back in a couple weeks. So we're taking a week off next week, and we'll be back in a couple weeks with more movies to discuss and more fun to have. And we'll see you then.
Bye.
Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.